Kevin Koval. Trying something new today. I don't know.
Look, we're going to try to get it right. It's going to be a long process. No,
wait,
not
wait,
my
wait.
Favorite.
Crazy K?
No, gee, no.
Shabbat ranks?
Shabbat ranks.
Am I Shabbat. Warmer, colder? I like Crazy K.
No, you're the only one.
Crazy Kev.
Oh, no.
That's horrible.
Crazy Casey.
Yo, how are you?
I'm wonderful.
Good. Well, we are currently enjoying beverages from one of our sponsors.
Our favorite sponsor.
Our only sponsor, to be honest. and our favorite, though.
It is our favorite. That's what I said. Why you got to contradict me?
Stolen Spirits. We are currently enjoying...
Rolling like I'm stolen.
Listen, we're enjoying variations of a Chicago Mule. You know, this is a... We're currently sipping on an 11-year-old aged whiskey.
With Pellegrino.
It's like peaty, like a scotch, but it goes down very smooth like a whiskey. Salutes to our sponsors.
You
Stolen.
Should write their commercials.
Look, I might.
Yeah, like, y'all need commercials.
We have a great. It does not stop on the corner store. You know what I mean?
Never.
We have an incredible squad of really profound guests, and our guest this evening is just off of the gig. I mean, literally taking off. His
thought that was
ID.
Like, you know, part of the fit.
It is really well because the fit doesn't stop either.
Yeah, right. But it's also like, okay, I feel you.
You're a rap-brarian.
Yeah, a rap-brarian, a real life librarian, one of the nicest MCs in the city of Chicago and around the world. His last project, Blackie, is a project that we'll get into talking about, but something that delves deep into his own familial history and the history of Black folks in this country. Someone who I think is. You know, does that work of lyricism that is also engaged in a studious process. Someone who you could tell is around books all the time because the album is filled with these gems where, you know, you got to go and also like sit with Google and be in the library to really even, you know, get hip to.
A lot of SAT words.
Facts.
Is it that?
I mean, it's, you know what? Well, there's also a lot of like what is incredible about this album. There's also a lot of like
pen game crazy,
pen game wild, yeah. And also like very vulgar on the album too in places, which I appreciate.
Vulgar ass pen game.
We will get into it, but Roy Kinsey in the corner store. Welcome, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This is incredible.
We are excited to have you. Of course, we have some gifts for you just, you know, from Jump Street. We have you've cracked open the Arizona iced tea.
Of course.
We have some lemon heads for you.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, we also have, of course, some Flaming Hot Crunchy Cheetos.
Gimme. Those are the ones.
Okay. He's like,
that's the one.
What?
All right.
What, baked beans?
Thank you.
Of course. Enjoy.
Okay, I don't understand. Oh, no, they're lemon heads. But you like baked beans.
The Boston baked beans.
But, like, explain to me why.
I was listening to the podcast that you had with the graffiti artist. I forgot his name.
We gave somebody baked beans
before. And he loved them too. And I'm like, yo, I love those. I don't know. It's
almost
a savory plus a sweet taste that. Well, because
they're
it's like salty
I
and
understand
sweet.
They're
that.
Nutty, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
but
it's
I only
like a candy
in the cookie form.
Yeah. Peanut,
you know?
Essentially.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, a chocolate chip cookie that got a little salt in it.
Facts.
Yeah. That's how I like my sweet and salty.
I love actual baked beans, for the record.
Right. Well, you are your own breed of human.
Is that makes me like so like, washed, doesn't it?
It's
like, I love a can
Wales
of baked beans.
Which
is why I like them. Which is why I like them.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know no one who eats Boston baked beans that are the beans or whatever. You know,
that's why I like baked beans. Is because
two people on this podcast have liked Boston baked beans.
Well, you like the sugared version. He likes the real
I like
real
the actual, like,
well, those
savory.
Boston baked beans.
Those are just baked beans.
Oh, they're just baked beans.
Those are.
Wait, so there are no, like.
Boston baked beans are candied peanuts.
Right.
And baked beans are actual beans in a can.
They might have baked beans at the corner store, too.
Oh, they do. They do. But, yeah, like, they get pork in them, though. I get the vegetarian ones because you already know.
What kind
you know
of
what I'm saying?
Is
keeping it.
A pinto?
1,000% kosher.
What kind of
I don't. I like a white bean and a red sauce, basically. I doctor them up. You know what I mean? I put some, like. Soy riso up in that piece.
Yes,
you know what I mean.
Soy riso is a fucking move.
Listen, I put some maple syrup and some sriracha. You know what I mean? And some garlic in there. Maybe I'll put some greens in there. Anyway, the point is, I lived in Europe and I was delayed. This is neither here nor there. This is neither here nor there.
But they really don't have great cuisine over there.
Wow, damn. A whole continent just got it.
I guess I'm talking about England.
You know why they do is because colonialism and your people have incredible food. Salutes to you and your people.
I have a lot to say about that. I know. We don't have to talk about right now.
No, it's fucked up. History is what it is. Which is part of the reason why we have Roy Kinsey in the building tonight. Roy, yo, man, thank you. Please save us.
save us.
Yeah, listen.
Spiraling.
Yo, so, we're gonna do a lot of work, but you literally just got off the gig. You are a for real librarian.
Yeah.
Which library?
Of the Richard M. Daley branch, Chicago and Kedzie. Just left Tonika Johnson, actually, doing the Folded Map project. So today,
corner store alum.
Yeah. And that was great. I mean, we got a lot of people out today, and being able to have her to come and, just share all of the work that she's been doing. I mean, you already know because she's been here, but to extend all of that information to my community, the West Humboldt Park community, and talking about race and segregation and It was really interesting to me. I don't want to like switch modes so fast, but just listening to the different conversations that were being had and having the people that were map twins. One was talking about something like I thought about it when thinking about like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? And like this bottom rung, people are talking about like shelter and food, and then there's other people in that are the map twins, and they're like talking about the engagement or feeling like seen in the world or wanting to like connect with people and unity and all of that. I'm just like, one is just talking about survival and the other people are talking about like preferences. It was really, really interesting. So I literally just left that and having her to come to the branch, which was really, really dope. And I'm doing like this work as a librarian, as a 21st century librarian, which is interesting and cool because I haven't really been doing it that long. I've been in libraries since I was like, born. My parents met at a library.
That's cute.
Wait, for real?
Yeah, it's cute. Their first date was Purple Rain, but they met at a library.
That's a meet cute,
before,
right?
Like before Harold Washington Library was even a library, the big library was the cultural center.
Right.
And my mom was walking in for an interview, and my dad was at the desk. And I'm literally a child of the library. It's
That's
like super
awesome.
Full circle. So
wait, you said their first date was Purple Rain?
Yeah.
The movie or the concert or
the movie?
Wow!
Oh, I assume the movie. That's also awesome.
That's beautiful. Yeah. So let's go all the way back then.
Let's give y'all a lot right now.
No, which is great. So where you're from? Chicago.
Born and raised.
Yeah. Where? What side?
So I was born at Columbus Hospital, which was like right over here, by the lake, but lived, on the South Side, Western, 55th. All over the place, really, and then moved to the West Side, like where the UIC spot is now, up until I was like five or six years old. Lived on Division at Pulaski until I was probably like fifth grade. After that, moved to North Avenue in Pulaski until I was like seventh grade, and then moved over by the Brickyard, and I'm just bought my house over there, or not so far from my mom. So I'm
bought your house.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey. Look, we don't have a lot of homeowners in the corner store, but hopefully that will change.
Grown shit.
That is grown shit.
Mm-hmm.
Why were you moving around so much? What do your folks do? I mean, they were librarians, or they were. What were they doing when you were young?
I think it's really, really interesting because I was thinking about this, which informs my music. I've always been. I think my mom just always kind of like wanted more. We were from the hood. My mom is from the hood. My mom is from, Washington and over there by like Madison, not far from where I work now. And she's from that neighborhood, but she always kind of like had this idea of like wanting more, right? So I think with every raise that she got, she kind of had an idea about like, oh, I want him to go to another school. I don't want him around the same things that I was kind of like surrounded by when I was growing up. And so I think that had a lot kind of to do with it. And there were moves when my parents were divorced, when my parents got divorced, like around, I was like six, probably like 6 or 7 years old. And then, yeah, those neighborhoods, they were all right, but that wouldn't really like last long. They were like, it felt like they were on the, the decline.
Do you remember seeing a kind of change or shift in the neighborhood?
I mean, I was so young that I don't think that I really was taking it all in as far as like being able to remember how it was. We weren't really ever anywhere for very long up until, the house that my mom bought when we were in like sixth or seventh grade up until, she still lives there now. Wow. And so that was like our home. It was our first home. And it's where I kind of like grew up from the time I was 14 up until I left for college. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean,
And do you have siblings?
Yeah.
I have a stepbrother and a stepsister. So my mom's partner's parents, my mom's partner's children, but we grew up together since I was like 5 or 6. Okay. And so those are definitely like my siblings, but that's
younger?
How I explain it.
Younger than you?
One is younger, one is older. So I went from being the only child from my mother to the middle child.
Yeah.
Huh. Although I have, siblings on my father's side, an older sister and two twin baby sisters that are like 6 years old right now.
You got that middle child syndrome?
I think I do.
What does that mean?
I don't really know, like, but I've always identified with Malcolm in the Middle. Like, what's happening here?
Oh, that too, but also the Brady Bunch with Marsha and
Peter.
And Jan was the middle sister, and she was always like, I'm overlooked. Nobody pays attention to me. It's always about Marsha, the younger one's
Marsha,
the baby.
Marsha. I never felt like that. I never really felt overlooked, but I do feel like I'm in a constant state of, like, what the fuck? It's just like so rooted in my head, very cerebral, sure. And really just kind of like, I can't believe this is happening, and I can't believe everybody else is okay with it,
Clearly you're the only one with sense, seems like.
That's the thing,
I mean,
right?
Like, just I thinking don't really know it that's all, what it just thinking, like.
Yeah.
So you went around with mom, like you, as opposed to pops, you would, you lived with mom as a kid.
Yeah, my mom and my grandma. I lived with my mom and my grandma until my parents met, or my mom and her partner met.
Mm-hmm.
And then with them. So yeah, it was mostly that. But yeah, my mom, my grandmother, and my aunt when my parents split up, and then. Yeah, we were really close though. Those few years, we did grow really close. It was like me and my mom. I'm a mama's boy for sure.
Right. So, when does music begin to be prominent in your childhood imagination?
I remember my mom and my grandmother writing the lyrics to like Whitney Houston songs, like listening to them, stopping the tape, writing what she said on a page.
Uh huh.
And then playing it back like all night.
To sing later?
To learn the song and sing later. Wow. And if you come to any family gathering, which you're, definitely invited to, everybody's got a song. Everybody in the family's got a song.
Some of them are singing Whitney Houston?
We don't sing Whitney so much anymore.
Oh, okay. Somebody got some pipes.
Right.
Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't like that.
They wrote them down. That mean they could sing them.
He's wearing voice lessons.
Pre-genius, right?
That's right.
Yeah, but I think a lot of that came from there. And then my mother's partner is has her own like choir, and put together a lot of shows at this after school program that I went to. So when my parents split up, when my mother and my father split up, we moved over by the UIC, and my grandmother in this new building that we moved into, like, she, you know, tragically, like, fell out of a window and, like, lost the use of her legs, right? And so, so me staying with my grandmother, that kind of changed, and I had to be, like, put into an after-school program, basically. And so she was confined to a wheelchair for the, you know, rest of her life, but when that first happened, which was the time I was, like, 5 or 6 years old, I had to start going to this place, and then that's when I started getting, you know, singing in this choir, and, like, we're going around performing at, like, churches and, like, singing, like, renditions of Joyful Joyful Sister Act and all of that, you know?
I love that movie.
So, yeah, so it's very much that. It's like, you know, people, my mom's friends would give me, like, my early tapes, MC Hammer tape. I had a Jets tape.
Yo, I love the Jets.
Really?
The Jet? No, for real. That was one of the first CDs that I think I bought with my own money for some reason. What's the joint?
Minnesota,
I think Samoan family.
Yeah.
Something I found out I got a crush on you, that joint. That is the jam.
That was my first. And I'm looking at this tape, playing it back and forth, like, I'm glad you.
No, trust me. Like, oh, I got roasted as a kid, though. My brother would be like, fam, really? Like, and my brother's younger than me, so I beat the shit out of him when he would try to say shit. But yeah, that, I was definitely a Jets fan. So MC Hammer, the Jets. This is a great era of music. I don't know. We might be around the same age. I don't know how old you are. I don't know if you want to.
I'm 32.
Okay. Oh damn, I'm mad older than you. But you
Yeah.
No, I'm like 11 years old. Oh wow. I'm a good 100 years older than you, Roy.
Good, solid.
Yeah, but a good millennia.
You know,
yeah,
a solid century.
The Jets. No, in my day, the Jets were just they were the first rock band. I mean. They actually banged rocks together. The point is,
I'm not sure how familiar I am unless you sang a song.
I gave you a bar.
I remember nothing. I remember the
big hair
album
maybe.
Cover
and the
name
and the they had the great acid wash jeans. I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
definitely.
From the 80s.
Yeah,
pre-80s.
They were like late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. But MC Hammer was in the mix, because I'm wondering when hip hop began to take root for you.
Right,
Thuggish Ruggish Bone.
Okay,
that was when everything changed. I hadn't heard anything like it. That song was continuously played on the radio, played on WGCI.
That's when you found it,
and it was I don't even know what it was, but I was captivated, and then after that,
was it the singing, the melody?
Harmony. Yeah, the harmony. Yeah. I mean, it was like rap, but it was also like, of course, harmony. Of course, the harmony.
Well, right. I mean, you cannot have the Bone Thugs without.
That's a rap dad joke waiting to happen.
I can't wait. Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
So, did your older sibling was your stepbrother?
My older sibling was my stepsister.
Did she listen to?
She's the one. She's the one that introduced me to all of my rap, right? So I listened to all of my rap through her, and it was Bone Thugs, it was Lil' Kim, it was Biggie, it was that Pac double disc, it was that Life After Death double disc. It was like she got all of that first, and I'm surprised she's not a rapper. I became a rapper probably. I've never even really thought about all of this, but I got my rap, my style, a lot of my hip hop from her, because she's just like 4 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always felt like pretty mature for my age, so she definitely, like, you know, she had no problem taking me to places. She had no problem taking me to high school when she was like, I just, you know, we were really, really, really close, and I got a lot from my older sister, including, you know, my love for rap.
What does she do now?
She's a librarian as well.
Hey, wow. Okay.
Listen.
So
it runs in the family or something.
It actually does.
Wait, so your stepdad or your father, or sorry, your mom's, which one was
dad, right?
Your father was the librarian.
Nobody's a librarian. My mother or my father.
You worked in the library.
They were, yeah. My mother.
Your dad was just posted waiting to meet your mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My father worked for the library, but he was not a librarian. And my mother works still for Chicago Public Libraries, but is not a librarian.
So what does your younger brother do?
Well,
you're pausing before you say librarian, because like.
My younger brother is living. He's living, you know, being a young man.
True.
Yeah.
That's just fair. Not really. He's a man. He's a full, you know, he's a man, but
he's a full man.
He's a grownish ass man.
We're only a couple of years younger than each other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So, when did you begin to then transition from listening to wanting to rap yourself?
Mm-hmm. Fifth grade, me and my friends wrote a song called Nothing to Lose, which was weird.
Do you remember?
No, I don't remember none of it.
Okay.
I don't remember any of it.
But it was the early crew you were in.
Yes. Yeah, it was me, my brother, and our homie Ernest. And we wrote this song in fifth grade. And then I transferred schools and always had a notebook. Writing rhymes in 6th, 7th, 8th grade, so much so. I still got a lot of those notebooks. would get in trouble. I got called. I started a rap right around the time President Clinton got, you know, accused and, you know, for that whole thing. I was in 7th grade. And I started writing a rhyme, and the first lines was like, "Dear Mr. President, I want to be just like you." And then my seventh grade teacher took my notebook and called my mom and read my rhyme over the phone
to my mom.
Right. Yeah, she's a snitch. But also, like, what did you admire about the president?
You must have been confused a little bit.
That is a confusing time for the country, and particularly if you're a young man.
Can I tell you something, though?
Please.
I went to the Clinton Library in Arkansas, because my family loves to go to presidential libraries.
Oh, and I did not know that about your family.
you're learning a lot about me today. The whole library, the only mention of Monica, one sentence. And that makes sense, but it was just like funny as fuck.
It was, like, I did not have sex with that woman. And then in parentheses,
like Monica or asterisk. Intern, period.
Wow.
Or something like that. It was like, yeah, no. Wow. Literally amazing. Anyway,
I rock Monica heavy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She that bitch, you know?
Yeah. No, she...
you wouldn't say that word, but
I would not.
I share the sentiment, but I will not utter that word.
I mean, yeah.
Not I.
Yeah.
Not I. You know she's only like 27, right?
Right now?
No.
She's aged this.
She was like mad young.
Yeah, mad young.
So when you think about, like, when I think about that in my like late 20s, I'm like, that's like... the whole situation just confuses.
No,
it's like that's me.
So, what did you admire about trash ass Buster Bill Clinton at that moment?
I think, for the sake of my rhyme, it sounded like something, you know, somebody who wants to be a rapper should say.
Dear Mr. President,
that's it.
Right. Okay. Cool. But you got in trouble.
Yeah.
What happened?
My mom's pretty cool. I'm pretty sure she just said something like, you know, you need to pay attention in school or you need to pay attention in school. She, you know, she's not trying to get called. But it was, I was shook the entire time that she's like dialing this. You know, I didn't know how my mother would react. And it wasn't an overreaction, but it, you know, nobody wants the teacher to like call their parent. And the other thing about it is that, like, when you're writing these rhymes early, like, you're operating in this very like secretive level, you know. It's not like I'm telling people like, yo, I want to be a rapper, or it's not that. It's like I'm really trying to work it all out. And so for her to not only read it, you know, take my notebook, she reads it in front of the entire class and then reads it over the phone to my mom. Like,
she read to the class.
I mean, the class is listening. She stopped class
to read your notebook, to read your rhyme.
To call my mom and read my rhyme over the phone.
The issue is like, you shouldn't be wanting to be like the president.
Or was she like, yo, you're nice with it?
You shouldn't be writing a rhyme in my class. And then on top of that, like, I look at this notebook, you know, I take your notebook from you and I look at what you're writing and...
and then it's...
What
was the rest of it?
I don't remember.
Uh-huh. Pleading the fifth.
That's pretty wild.
Sure it was trash.
Wow. Like Bill Clinton. Anyway, the point. But you obviously you weren't the desire to write was not thwarted by that experience of your teacher snitching. You continued because why?
Mm.
That's a good reason.
I don't know. It was something that was bigger than me, obviously, right? It was just like that's the thing that I kind of, you know, moved toward, and I'm like in love with No Limit around this time, and in love with the Rough Riders and Jay-Z,
yeah,
these early Rockefeller days, and like that's just what I wanted and what I seen for myself. There was nothing cooler, you know, like Montel Jordan and Master P and Silk the Shocker drop. I'm like, oh, this is dope, you know, like I'm very, very in that moment of like just wanting to write music, and yeah, that's just, I don't know, that's just was calling me.
And so where did you go to high school?
I went to Lane Tech High School.
Ah, mm-hmm. Wow. All right. Gang is in the building.
Yes. I'm so proud to come from Lane Tech. That school looks beautiful now. I mean, it was beautiful then. I was very, very, like, even before I went and got accepted to Lane, I was just like, yo, I'm going to go to that school. I used to drive past it every day, driving with my sister when she first got her license, and used to drive past that school, and then I got in, and it was great then, and it's even better now.
Well, for those that might not know, tell us about Lane and what it the space it held for you even before you went there. Like, why is it significant in the imagination of a young man who is looking at high schools in
Chicago? It's very strange. You know what? It's very strange because now that I think about it, my mom would always be like, driving past it, because she used to work at Sulzer. I think that they had, you know,
yeah.
So she used to work at Sulzer Library, and we used to drive past, and she used to say, she used to say that's where the police take their exam, and like,
at Lane?
That's a great school.
Oh. Mm.
She just knew that, and so I think that it was kind of like instilled in me very, very early, and so when I started, you know, thinking about schools, that was one of them. Plus, it just like looks, you know, I mean, it's a beautiful high school, but it looks collegiate, and it's just large. It was just a really, really big school, and so I got a lot of it from my mom. I got a lot of it from just seeing it. I didn't want to go to Peyton. A lot of like my whole class went to Peyton, and I didn't want to go where, you know, all of my high school or grade school friends went. So there were a lot of things, but I really just thought that it would be a dope school to go to.
And what kind of kid were you in high school?
I don't know. I think I was homecoming prince. I was the homecoming king. I got robbed.
But I mean, clearly, let's talk about it.
Yeah, right, let's talk about it. Tell me how you feel. over 10 years later, let's go.
Right, no, yeah, who is dude? Yeah, no, what is dude doing, really? You know what I mean?
Yeah, what's the king doing? He ain't shit, I'm sure.
He's a police officer.
Well.
Listen.
Stop it. You guys cut it out. He's
okay.
Relax. It was, this is the best.
It's fair.
I mean, you said told us to cut it out, so you got something to back that up.
Anyway,
so you were in part. You must have been then.
I was an art student.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was an art student. I went to school for I went to Lane for art, and so I did art all 4 years.
What kind of art?
Commercial art, which is a lot of drawing and you know, still lives and painting and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really, really.
And what is that experience like if you're going every day from the west side to, you know, the near north side, transitioning mm-hmm. from the neighborhood you were living in to a campus like Lane Tech? What were you thinking in terms of even the topographical, like, social political landscape? I mean, you're going through so many different neighborhoods in mm-hmm. that commute.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the things that you were beginning to think about as a young person in high school?
I don't know. It wasn't there. My mind wasn't there yet. I wasn't putting anything together like this. I wasn't even traveling. And it's so funny because Tonika says that when she was going to Lane,
right,
that she would be riding through these neighborhoods and she would be like, yo, I'm witnessing, you know, that this neighborhood looks different from this or, you know, and that's how she created the project. But I don't think that I was having these thoughts. You know, I was driving when I was a sophomore, and I would pick up my friends from school. I wanted to go to Tony Sports and get some gear.
On Sheridan?
You know, Sheridan. Yeah. So I went there. That's where my mind was. Yeah. My mind was on like shoes and clothes and Twista albums and like it was very that. But my mind wasn't. I don't think that I was at all thinking about, you know, the things that I talk about on the Blackie album, thinking about like migration, thinking about black folks, thinking about, you know, I knew I was black and having a black experience, but I don't remember feeling like how I felt and like how I expressed myself on the Blackie album. I don't think that those were thoughts of mine.
Well, I want to get to maybe that transition, but Tony Sports, Twista Records.
Yes.
This is also part of the experience of Chicago hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
And so what year did you graduate high school?
2004.
How aware were you and of a Chicago hip hop scene at that moment? I mean, 2004 is a significant year mm-hmm. in Chicago hip hop music.
Mm-hmm.
But how aware were you of a larger Chicago hip hop community?
I don't really know if I was. I remember, of course, like growing up, listening to Do or Die. I remember, you know, Crucial Conflict was from our neighborhood. And so I always knew of a person that knew the person, you know, that knew the artist.
That's it was Chicago
like,
shit, though.
That person is, you know, like Johnny P's my cousin. I've never met him. You know,
facts.
Oh, that's real.
Oh,
that's
wow.
real. Yeah. So Johnny P's my cousin.
Future collab.
Yeah. Right. I've never met him. People knew Twista. People knew. I was always in a neighborhood of one of those people, so I knew that, and that made rap, you know, closer to me. And then,
you were cognizant of that when you were younger.
I always knew performers. I even have an aunt that rapped first, and I just thought she was a star. And the fact that she knew how to rap and had this talent and was making her own songs, like we were performing other people's songs, she was writing her own songs. I thought
what's her name?
Famous. Her name is Glow, Gloria, but we called her rap name was Glow.
Yeah. Did that you know make you think it was possible to pursue rap is a, you know, real thing?
Of course. All of those things, you know, help. All of those things help. All of those things are kind of put it in your sphere. But I think even just performing, like performing at these churches or performing at the after school program that I was attending, like in May, it was something called the May Brunch. And we would, you know, it was a huge thing every year. And 350 people would come. These are like church ladies mm-hmm. and people from, you know. So we were doing that then and kind of like seeing the reactions of people, hearing a song. And so I think that was the earliest thing. I've just been on stages for a really, really long time. And then when I kind of like seen other rappers or knew that other people were rapping in the scene or when Slow Jams came out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, that was that was crazy.
Game over.
That was game over for me.
Why that record?
I just got chills. I had never heard anything like it before. The first time I heard it on the radio, I got, like I felt chills all over my body because I'm like, Kanye is from Chicago, but he's signed to The Rock, and then Twista comes on this song. I just couldn't even fathom anything like that.
That is a wild pop record. Like,
you don't really think about it because you hear it. It's like a classic now.
Right.
Yeah.
But
it's, you know, that it's 14 years old, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so to imagine that that record would appear now is something that is also, like, is wild to think about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, but then there was, like, We Are the Champions. That was, like, all of these songs and these albums, you know, I don't even remember Kanye's album, but I remember those mixtapes at Tony Sports.
Yeah.
When his album came out. So it's like he had this album that was out, but he also had like a mixtape of all these songs working with other Chicago artists. Just like it was nuts.
They would put it in the sporting goods store.
Tony Sports was a gear shop that all
did
like
say sporting goods store.
I know.
Oh, I don't know.
It that's
like
where
Sports Authority.
I know, but it was like a local
streetwear shop.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was where you go get sneakers. It's also where like they had murals outside of the store. Graffiti writers would get up. Mm-hmm. It was just a hub for mm-hmm. Chicago hip hop culture. Tony Sports. Right at Sheridan, right underneath the Red Line.
Oh. Yeah.
But it's gone now, of course. Yeah. You know. But and of course, I mean, Kanye was with Cruz before his own ascendance into his solo career. You know, mm-hmm. Heavy Hitters and you know other. He was part of like other Cruz. I mean, you know, Mickey Halstead and
yes.
Ron
yeah,
Fest and like. DJ Ferris and others were a part of this kind of like larger community mm-hmm. that he was representing mm-hmm. and then emerged.
Mm-hmm.
So that's significant. So when did you then begin to transition? Because you went away to college.
To DePaul.
Mm-hmm. What did you study there?
Radio, television, and film.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you've got a great voice.
You're doing it now.
And at DePaul, were you emceeing on campus and in the city? How did that maturation process begin for you?
A little bit. I was writing. I met DJ Castle. I don't know if y'all know Castle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah. So we had class together and. He made beats.
Yeah.
And so we ended up linking up and made some songs together and made my first album. And then took that album to showcases with like Hustle Simmons and all of them and did these wild hair showcases and like different spots around the city, Sub T and all of those spots. So that's kind of how I really started. Like that was the first time that I was putting my original music in front of other people. The first project is called Keep the Receipt. It was
nice.
it was called Keep the Receipt.
That's dope. That's dope.
Like I got the receipts.
Yeah, exactly. It's prophetic.
Check you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very that Keep the Receipt. And that was really just how it happened. And from then on, you know, I was putting projects out. So my second one was Rookie of the Year, R-O-Y, Roy.
Hey.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, nice.
Let them know.
And then the one after that was Beautiful Only, and then after that it was like a 5-year, you know, no music, and then Blackie came out. But
what happened?
I was just, you know, finishing school. I was going back to library school. I was buying a house. I was just living life. Yeah, mm-hmm. Setting the foundation for my second stage, for the mm-hmm. second stage of my life. I can say that now. It felt like a particularly hard time, but it was like the things that you want, you kind of have to grow up to appreciate them, right? So the fun changed a little bit, and, you know, yeah, it was really just that. It was really just kind of like adjusting for things that you asked for, right? You can't really be the same person with like new responsibilities. You gotta ask you to change. So,
did you know you were gonna go back to the music?
I think so. I think I did. It wasn't over for me because I never really felt like I accomplished what I wanted to, and so I never really felt because I never treated music like a hobby. I never felt like it was a hobby, so I never felt like I was done. But I also felt like. You know, you got to do better, and you kind of have to approach this with a different attitude, right? Because I don't think that I necessarily did all of the things right before. It, you know, as much as seriously as I took music and developing like the technical skills about it, I wasn't out making the best use of my time and energy. I wasn't like networking with people. I wasn't meeting people. I wasn't like, you know, even at the shows, at the showcases that I would do, it was like I jump off stage and I would leave and like, you know, wouldn't talk to nobody there.
Why is that?
Just because, you know, I think part of it was my friends were there and we wanted to leave and go party and go get drunk somewhere. So that was one of the things. Fair. The other thing was that I just thought too much of myself and I was really just feeling like I just killed this stage. I'm better than everybody. Good night. So, you know, it was just like, I don't know why that was how my mind was working then, but, It didn't really feel like I needed to do those things. And so I don't really know. I mean, I was just young and being in college and wanting to be with my friends more than anything. Plus, I didn't really like know that you need to kind of like be in spaces. I really just had a really narrow outlook on a lot of things, especially like networking. I'm like, I'm not going to network with anybody. Like, this is so fake. You know, it was like very, very that when you really could be in a space and genuinely build with somebody and genuinely, you know, I just wasn't there. Just immature, just young and, you know.
Yeah. So the Blackie the record, the album, is certainly, I mean, it not only does it come in this 5-year span, but it seems like it's a growth for you. I mean, the record itself is in part an investigation of a familial story.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also an investigation of various conditions currently in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the composition of the record. How long in the making did it take you to write?
After a session, the executive producer, the producer on the album, Mike Jones, we had a session one day. He came to my house and then I made a list of some songs that I had and just want like a progress sheet, right? Like written, recorded, you know, like just trying to map it out. I would say I made that in February of 2017 and then the album came out in February 2018. So I'd say a solid year of it was a year.
And tell us a little what the record is about.
The record is an homage to my grandmother.
The same one that you came up with?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. She passed away in 2016. And I was, although I don't think that I was drinking at the time that she passed away, I think that I had just decided that I wasn't going to drink anymore, maybe like a week before the last time that I had seen her, and then after she kind of like passed away or somewhere around, I kind of get that part mixed up. I do remember drinking after she passed away and then like having a really bad hangover and a really bad anxiety and thinking about her and thinking about like you know what would she be doing if she had my ability. So if she had the ability to kind of like walk around, you know, like have the use of her legs for like the last 30 years of her life, what would she, you know, I'm sure she wouldn't be sitting here with a hangover, you know, mm-hmm. battling anxiety. It was just like, that's on a very, very, you know, low level. But I also thought about, I was in 2015, riding home from school and I'm kind of like hearing on the radio that this cop is not going to be mm-hmm. you know, in prison for Trayvon's murder, same thing with Mike Brown. And so it's like all of that, right? Plus, you know, this second stage of my life, which is like in astrological spiritual communities, they say, you know, it's your Saturn return. So every 28, between 28 and 32 years, the Saturn has the same placement that it had around the time that you were born. And so you kind of experience like your own personal tumultuous shakeups that are going to help you to shake away the things that can't come, you know, in your second stage of life, right? And so, yes, of course, I'm battling anxiety, especially if I have an entire album in me, right? That's how I'm kind of like thinking about my process now. It's like if I have anxiety, it's usually because I got something to say. But but it's like all of that. It's like,
and it's also about her journey too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah, because I'm thinking about Chicago and how Chicago shaped me being, you know, young and black. And I think about my grandmother who was born in Mississippi under completely different circumstances and how they kind of like shaped her and like questioning, asking like, what is it to not have a home, right? To not, you know, you're choosing to leave because somebody has made it hard for you to call the place that you thought home was home. And so, which is the Great Migration, right?
Right. And that's the brilliant thing about, one of the brilliant things about the record is it is about the diaspora, the journey north, and it's also about the continual contestation of the home here, mm-hmm. right? That even in Chicago, mm-hmm. black folks in particular are also wrestling with the notion of home, given the hostile circumstances to their very existence, which is some of what you are also exploring on the record, which is layers and layers and layers mm-hmm. of generational trauma, terror, and also resilience, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're talking about multiple generations of survival as well on the record.
Yeah. I love how you talk about the album.
I love the album.
Thank you, Kevin. But when you introduced me at Soul House, I'm like, I don't know if I can go on.
but these are facts. So I guess, you know, you're a librarian, you're surrounded. I mean, what was the research process like to create this record?
It's so interesting. I took a class in college, and I need to find this teacher. His name is Ted Manley.
Yo, I know Ted.
Do you?
I dropped out of DePaul or was kicked out or left. I forget.
You forgot?
Yeah, well, it was a long time ago. And but Ted was an incredible sociology major, sociology professor, he was one of the dudes who like, you know, was like definitely challenging me.
Yes.
And also like really like schooling me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ted Manley is an incredible, incredible guy.
Any relation?
Do you still
to
talk
Todd?
To him? Or anyway.
Yeah.
He had a class called, yes. He had a couple classes that I took. One of them was Sex in the City, where we kind of like talked about Sex in the City, the film, and, you know, all of its dynamics and who gets to be and do what, right? But the other class that I took with him was the Black Metropolis. So I was, you know, he that was the first time that I heard all of how beautiful Chicago was, especially for black folks, right? And going through Bronzeville and all of that. And then after that, one of our One Book, One Chicago books was The Warmth of Other Suns by Isabel Wilkerson. And I read that book and I couldn't, I just couldn't believe that in hip hop, where it's, I couldn't believe how we hadn't talked about that story, the story of, you know, black folks like making up urban areas in the North. And in the East, I couldn't believe that had gone so long. I know hip hop is young, but
especially in the Midwest, right? I mean,
you're talking about the North. Are you talking about the city? Or are you talking about the?
I'm talking about
the North, like
North
like
from,
above
from Mississippi. Oh, yeah, yeah, black yeah, folks, yeah. You know, left these southern states because because of a multitude of reasons, right. Whether it be terror, like he said, or
jobs were promised. There was the lie of the North. You know, I mean, all of these. And also the necessity to fill factories. You know, But specifically in the Midwest, and I think a lot about St. Louis and you know, the kind of even like, you know, Nelly's notion of country grammar. And the lack of the narrative then also being about that migration from the South to cities like St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland. How much of the West Side sounds like Mississippi? How much of the South Side sounds like Arkansas? You know what I mean? This is the story of the city. These are how the great cities are made, is because of that migration.
Yes. You know? Let's get it.
but that's part of, that's in part what the record is about.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to do that. I wanted to explore it and have it be a little audio genealogy, but more so, you know, I did my 23andMe, and but I wanted to just question my lineage and my grandmother's lineage and really just compare our situations and. In one moment be like, yo, there's a lot of trauma here, and then the next be like, of course there's a lot of hope here, and if your grandmother survived, as sweet as she was, despite being paralyzed and being of the Jim Crow South and, you know, all of the other things, then there's still, you know, hope and space for me to be sweet as well.
Right, she survived all that.
Right.
Because there's a lot of celebration on the record too. Yeah, there's a lot of turnt records on the album too.
So that's very. I'm sorry to cut you off. No. That's very us though. I was thinking about or reading this piece that was in the New Yorker 2 years ago, but that just kind of like resurfaced about Aretha Franklin and them talking about her. Her father, C.L. Franklin, who was this pastor who would start very slow, you know, in delivering his sermon and his message. But by the end, you know, it was like turn, which is like very, you know, very our culture, very black, very church. And so I kind of wanted to do that. Plus, you kind of have to with as much as on the front of Blackie, you kind of have to.
Right. There has to be reprieve
in the name. Yeah.
Also salutes for the nod and maybe hope that more rappers are also reading the New Yorker. That's dope. So this is a breakthrough record, right? I mean, this is, this record, it gets critical praise, LA Times, Billboard, you know, publications around the city are commenting, thinking, writing about the record. Yeah. What was the acceptance of it? What was that like for you?
It was very spiritual for me. Everything is very spiritual for me. It always comes back to kind of like, you know, you get what you kind of like work for, and that was one of the things that I said to myself, which I had a lot of anxiety when I was gonna decide to like not drink for a while, and I was just like, you know, if it's terrible, if your sobriety is terrible, alcohol will be there, don't worry, you can like go back. But I did say to myself, you know, give this your all, because I didn't feel like I had exhausted all possibilities when it came to my creativity and making an album. So I took on the challenge of if I was going to do it sober and write and actually just to get clear, because I was writing music while under the influence, and not that I was drinking every day, but absolutely abusing alcohol when I did, and it was just taking too long, right? So, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'm like binge drinking, and still trying to act like I'm in college, although I'm like getting older, so the hangover's lasting longer. There's anxiety there that I can't really get over, and I'm not really creating. I'm like, I was over my rhymes in like a week. I'm like, you know, I would write something, and then the next week I'm like, so, you know, I was, it was very that. And so I wanted to challenge myself to get clear enough to say what mattered, to say what was on my heart, and to really get down to the bottom of why I thought my experience was so bad. You know, like,
I mean,
why was
cathartic.
It was extremely cathartic. It was I wrote Jungle Book and then and recorded it, and it was very calm. But then I was practicing it for a show, and I'm like crying. And then I perform it at the show, and then I'm like crying and yelling, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is a, you know, this is good that this is happening. This is maddening and saddening, but I'm glad that I have found like a container, you know, for my anger. Opposed, you know, like I stopped because I was obviously escaping, you know, through drinking. That was the thing, right? There are plenty of people that are handling their substances, you know, in moderation.
Like Tara and I, for instance. You know, I mean, listen, you know, off to Stolen.
Right.
Rolling.
Rolling,
well,
off to Stolen.
I mean, what did you figure out about yourself while you started making music sober?
I figured out that, you know, I was investing a lot in a personality of like being easygoing and being the party guy and like being the good time, but obviously escaping something, right? And so I wanted to ask myself, what were you escaping? What's the reason for this? Because you said that you wasn't gonna go so hard this night, and then you went that hard. That happened maybe like two or three times before I was like shook, like, okay, this is turning into a problem. So once I realized that I was escaping something, then I, you know, had this like line of questioning about like, all right, well, what could you possibly escaping, you know, be escaping? Well, I'm, you know, afraid when the police are behind me. I am seeing people walk freely after killing black folks. I'm seeing trauma on my television screen, on my phone, on my computer before I, you know, there it's playing before I even clicked on it. I'm also getting adjusted to having a mortgage, you know what I mean? Scary. Yeah. You know, just like, yeah. all of the things. And so, but I had to be aware of that. I couldn't continue. I wasn't happy. I was in pain, and I just wanted to get to the bottom of it, and then I was able to like make a record, you know, from the heart, finally, that encompassed, you know, my people and where we came from and our standing in America and our contributions to America. And my rhymes weren't so Roy centered, you know, although, you know, Blackie is very Roy, you know what I mean? It's my album, of course. And I was able to use my ego in a different way.
Yeah, it's your family story, but it is a story
of Chicago.
Exactly. And the story really of America and the story of Black America.
It was so interesting to me when I learned that about the Great Migration, but how it, I mean, you learn about it, but, you know, you're learning about it.
Maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
But you're learning about it in like a very like one dimensional way. But when you're in a city where the city has been so affected by it, you know, it's so different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How like the West Side and South Side are affected by it, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's really interesting.
Definitely.
So by the time this interview comes out, there will be you have a big show coming up at some point. I'm thinking of the Red Bull show.
How do you know about the Red Bull show?
I know about the show because I know about things.
So what?
Well, right.
I'm so confused. I've been confused about this Red Bull show.
Yeah,
for weeks.
Yeah, how?
Because I just don't know how it happened.
Because well, I don't know how it happened.
They know.
What do you mean you don't know how it happened?
I mean, I don't know how it happened. I just got a random email one day. And then a few people that I talked to, they're like, oh, yeah, you're on that Red Bull show, right? And I haven't said nothing really to nobody. But
wait,
people
can we talk about it since it's going to come out
after? Of course.
After?
Of course. It'll come. I think it'll come out right before, hopefully.
Okay, so you just love
so
breaking
fun.
News.
That's cool.
I love breaking news. I love breaking news.
Kevin will always be like, oh, you have that thing coming up.
Scoops.
And I'm like, we haven't, the internet doesn't know Kevin.
I love this.
Look, I'm like the Tara Mahadevan of this rap shit. Tell us about the show.
Wait, but can we talk
about
the show?
I don't even know what to tell.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Is this before, we're talking about, this is coming up before the show or before the announcement?
The show, our current podcast, what we're talking on right now, will come out after the announcement, but it'll come out before the show.
Oh, so we can talk about it. So
that's what I'm saying. Thank you.
Okay, well,
but I think you
clarity.
Got more information than I do. All I know is I'm doing it.
Yes.
Is it a Red Bull, like the Fest show?
Yeah, it is. It's part of 30 days, or I don't know what they're calling it at this point.
They're calling it something else, I think.
True. But in November,
yes,
there will be a show of which you are a part of this.
Oh, you don't know who he's playing with?
Do you know who you're playing with? Do they tell you about the show?
There's
no.
Like, can
damn,
you
they
the
didn't
show and here's some money? And you're like, okay.
Red Bull.
Yeah, it's not a bad look.
I know it's a very exciting show.
Blackie Friday.
Casey Ortiz is a part of the show. Mm-hmm. Kid Ken is a part of the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be a great night and a celebratory night.
Okay, so clearly
night.
You've looked at the schedule, and I have not.
I'm just excited for this show. What did they say to you? Because
they asked me if I wanted to do a show on Black Friday.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
It's Black Friday the day after, right? Thanks.
Yes.
Yeah. So
they asked me if I wanted to do a show. I said yes.
23rd. That's all they told you. Like, do you want to do a show? And you're
like
indeed.
It's because the name of your title.
And I'm for real. I'm for real.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited for that show.
Yeah. Listen.
Yeah. This will come out prior to that show, and the announcement will be out by the time
September, right.
And folks could go see that show and should see that show in part because your live show, as I've seen at the Soho House, is also filled with energy and also, I mean, you damn near created an altar on stage when you were at the Soho.
For sure.
And I wonder if that's something that you do regularly when you perform.
I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say what I was going to say. But I was taking that altar and doing that pretty pretty regularly because that's just what it's about. But that's also, you know, one of the moments and one of the practices that I have that kind of like helps me through, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what I do at the show is kind of like, you know, building altar for my grandma and, like, you know, put a drink on there and put her cigarettes on there, her picture.
What's
or
her drink?
Whatever. She drank Old Milwaukee beer.
Wow.
She
wow.
drank it warm.
Wow. So thorough.
Like not room temperature, but warm? Or is that
oh,
warm
well,
is?
She didn't warm it up. It was room
she wouldn't put it in a kettle.
I know. I was like, what kind of warm I'm talking about here?
We put on my Old Milwaukee.
Set it in the sun for a spell, and then I may drink it.
Why is Roy's grandma British? But listen, I don't know.
Just,
all old people
you know, listen,
are British.
Roy Kennedy is a British name. That 23 and me. I seen some British
wow,
blood in there.
Damn, colonialism.
Well, I was
this
channeling your grandmother.
incredible.
And my colonial, you know, the people who colonized my country. Anyway.
Yeah, facts. Yeah, man. So, you know, it's interesting because I feel like you put on for a lot of communities. How important is that to you? And how much of that is conscientious in terms of your writing, in terms of your practice, in terms of your presentation and representation? How often do you think about that?
I think about myself and I think about healing myself and I think about you know representing myself and I am a part of a lot of communities but I don't know if that's the way that I approach it. I really try to kind of like be
the best, most whole self that I can be at that moment, and then see what that sounds like. But I try to be very, very careful about being cheap. I just don't want to do that. So I don't want to necessarily say that I'm like representing a community. You know, I'm really representing myself. I'm really just trying to show up whole, because, you know, my music is very personal and very cathartic and therapeutic for me, and it's very much like I feel a lot of times like I'm being used, right, as a person to like deliver a message. And so I really try to remember that more than I think about representing communities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I've seen the work speak to, you know, so many people, hip hop heads, fans of music,
yeah,
black folks. You've been in YCA spaces, and mm-hmm. and it has resonated also with young queer kids.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, and I've seen the result of that as being an incredibly important impact in our spaces. And I wonder, you know, how much that impacts your writing process, your presentation process, or just the various ways that you think about that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how to answer that question. I don't really know how to answer that question. I know I want it to be, if people think about me, I want them to be proud of me for sure. And I want them to, but more than anything, I kind of want to be an example about, like, you know, what you can do and like overcoming and all of that. But I can't necessarily like claim a role that I don't necessarily like operate from. I don't know if that's like good or bad. I don't really know how to answer that.
Mm-hmm. And what are you working on now?
I just put a song out today called Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, congrats.
That's dope.
Thank you. That's my Chicago hip hop homage.
Okay.
Shout out to, you know, I don't know Twista, but shout out to Twista and Psychodrama.
Always.
And Do or Die.
Always.
And all of them, because those, they formulated a sound, and as soon as I heard the beat from Ill Brown, I'm like, that's what this is about to be. I'm not gonna pass on this beat. I'm actually about to jump on this beat. And I, you know, we did the song with Mother Nature, and in some way we were able to, you know, make something that sounded new, but it, you know, definitely has that classic Chicago sound, and kind of like you can hear Twista, you can hear Crucial Conflict, you know, and so. Yeah, that's that. I'm going to put a EP out of these songs, because I've been dropping a song every month. So I'm going to put an EP out next month, and then it's back to, you know, the follow-up project, which I guess I'll just, like, say it. It's like, it's going to be called 400, and I think I'm going to put it out in February. We'll see. That's the plan. It's very, very early. But a lot of the songs are written. Some of the songs are recorded. But, you know, 2019 being 400 some odd years since black folks have been on this land. Of course, you know, black folks were on this land before 1619.
Right. Yeah. Yes, yes.
But, you know, so it's that. So that's a working title, and that's the reason why. And I'm looking and hoping for February, and so I just gotta get back to work. And the winter's coming.
Yeah,
Lord Snow of the North.
Nice. Well, we anticipate and greatly appreciate everything that you put out into the world. Where can folks find you on the internet?
Yes. Instagram, I'm Rap Brarian. Twitter, I'm Roy Kinsey. All of the music, the Blackie album, and all of the new singles are on all of your streaming services on Apple Music and Tidal and Spotify and SoundCloud.
No doubt.
Awesome.
Yeah, Roy Kinsey, thanks so much for being in the corner.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the Corner Store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the Corner Store at cornerstore_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the Corner Store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.